So this is the first time that I've ever tried to record using Skype before, so hopefully it goes well.
Okay.
But anyway, so I'm not sure exactly what you received from Dr. Marsh about this project, but we're trying to interview as many as the alums of the USC Public History Program as we can and talk to you all about what your experiences were, what you think the program did for your career, or perhaps not, and maybe some thoughts on what your vision would be for the Public History Program.
Okay.
So, any questions?
No.
Who is that?
This is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Typical cat. He wants to be in on the action.
Yep. Yeah, I like cats too. Even though I am allergic. So that makes the Skype thing work out, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, when did you come into the program?
So I started the program in the fall of 1992. And I graduated in December of 1994.
Who was director when you came in?
So I started the same semester that Dr. Wyanus started, and he and Connie Schultz were co-directors at that point. So he came in as co-director of the program. So, so it was his first semester there as well as mine.
And how did you end up choosing to come to it was in the applied history program, correct?
That's right. And it was applied history at the time.
And did you apply for the MA?
Yes. So I applied for the MA program in applied history with a specialization in historic preservation. And how did I choose USC? I was in the Air Force and was getting ready to get out of the Air Force and apply to a number of schools, and got into USC, and which was really lucky because my husband at the time was still in the Air Force and was stationed at Shaw Air Force Base in Sumter.
Okay, you're not far.
So I commuted from Sumter.
So that must have been difficult.
It was fine. It's not that far, you know. So, So it was fine.
And you were at in Texas before.
I was in Texas before. Actually, I'm originally from Texas. So my undergraduate degree is from Texas A&M, and from Texas A&M, I went into the Air Force. And I was stationed in Texas, and then in Spain, and then in England, which is where I met my now ex-husband. And then was transferred to California. And this was, I was in England. We were in England during the first Gulf War. And after the first Gulf War, I went to California, and he went to South Carolina, and then there was a drawdown. So, they were reducing the number of active duty folks, and the Air Force offered me an obscene amount of money to get out. And not being a stupid person, I took the money.
Of course.
And then joined him at Shaw Air Force Base there in Sumter, and started the program just a couple months later.
Is that how you became interested in military sites in South Carolina?
It is. So you've looked up my master's thesis.
Yes, it's been checked out a few times.
Really?
It has. Yeah, just looking here, at least five.
Oh wow! So that is how I got interested, because I, I had a military background. And I'm trying to remember which of the case studies I did first, but what happened, how I came about to write that thesis was I did pieces of it for different classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a paper on Walterboro, the air base in Walterboro, and then I did a paper on Camp Croft, and it sort of all came together as I was looking at writing my thesis, and narrowed it down to just those bases that were decommissioned after the war and stayed decommissioned, because there were a number that either stayed active or were reactivated later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't do any of the Navy stuff, because most of that stuff stayed active, in the Charleston area.
Were you able to do anything else with the work for your thesis, or did you turn it in? And
I turned it in, and that was pretty much it. So, and part of that was, though, because we moved, we left South Carolina.
Right.
Actually, Connie Schultz used to use me as an example, that if Betsy can finish her thesis, anyone can finish her thesis, because I moved, I moved three times during the time that I was working on my thesis.
Really? And it's quite a tome, too, actually.
It is. It is. At some point I was told, you need to stop doing research and just finish it. So yeah, it is. It's pretty hefty. But it was a lot of good stuff, and it was a lot of interesting things.
You have a shout out to Connie Schultz in the acknowledgement section there about sticking her neck out for you.
So she, I didn't have an undergraduate degree in history,
mm-hmm.
and I was coming out of the Air Force, and I think she really kind of took a chance on me in terms of accepting me into the program, and I'm grateful.
And
it was a great experience.
And it worked out.
Yeah, it did.
So thinking back on the time that you were here, any big themes from your graduate training that stuck with you or helped shape your career?
Well, certainly just the discipline of doing research and how to do research and how to document your findings. I use that, even though I don't work in the field of historic preservation professionally, I am involved on a volunteer basis, but just the discipline of being able to do research and formulate a thesis and defend it, and the writing, putting that sort of thing together.
Mm-hmm. So you enjoy the research aspect of graduate school?
I did, and I still enjoy doing research. As I mentioned, I'm active in historic preservation on a volunteer basis. I'm the chair of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission here in Clark County, Virginia. I'm also on the board of the Stones Chapel Memorial Association, which is a group. I'm getting the feedback here.
Yeah, me too, a little bit.
Yeah, so Stones Chapel Memorial Association has taken ownership of a small former Presbyterian church that was built in 1848, which makes it one of the oldest churches existing here in Clark County. And it's a little mystery about the church's origin. Actually built it.
Really?
And we want to get it listed on the National Register. So I've done a little bit of research. I went down to Richmond, which is where the at the Union Seminary, they have the archives of Presbyterian Church and or Presbyterian Church in Virginia, and so I've been down and read through some Presbyterian meeting minutes from the 1840s and 1850s, and that's interesting. And so it's fun to get back into it, to do that research, that kind of research again.
Exactly. So what kind of classes did you take while you were here?
Is Dr. Sinnott still there?
No.
Marcia Sinnott?
Marcia Sinnott, no. We have actually two professors currently who are full-time public history currently.
Oh, no, she wasn't a public history, but she was in the history department. So, I took the basic research methods. I took, historic preservation. I did take a museum class. That was over at Kissick.
Mm-hmm. People still do that.
Yeah. Dr. Sinnott taught in the, up to Williamsburg. Looked at sort of living history kinds of things. So that was a class. And then, is Dr. Ford there? Still there, Lacey Ford?
No, only by reputation.
Yeah, so I took his, one of his classes, and it was one of those things where, I got a B in the class, and I was so proud of that B.
Really?
I worked harder for that B than I worked for some of the A's I got. I think most of what I, most of the straight history classes I took were either Southern history or modern history. I didn't delve into any like European or military history or anything like that. So, I was in the historic preservation track. So,
with Wyeth basically the whole time, right?
Yeah. And actually, I don't think Dr. Marsh was even there when I was there.
Oh, no. No, she came much later.
Yeah.
So who would be the most influential professor that you encountered here?
Well, that's kind of a toss-up because Bob and Connie were sort of co-directors.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I didn't take any archives classes, Connie was, very supportive and helpful to me. And I'm still, I'm still in touch with her. She has a place up here in D.C. And frequently when she comes up, we'll get together for dinner or lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's hard to say, between Bob and Connie, it would be kind of a toss-up.
Exactly. Well, don't feel like you have to choose for the purpose of this. No.
Okay.
It's up to you. So while you were here, I don't have a record. Did you complete an internship or external assistantship?
I did. And that was a great experience. And really having that sort of real world experience was really very beneficial. So I had an assistantship at GIA, the Institute for Archaeology and Anthropology. And actually, my supervisor there, I just found out recently that Steve Smith is now the director of GIA, and he was just a staff archaeologist at the time. And so, and then I did an internship with him one summer and wrote. He had a contract, or maybe still does, with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they, farmed out this project to him. There's a lake up in northwestern Georgia that, in building the dam for this lake, the Army Corps of Engineers took down a house, and thinking, oh, it's just an old house. Right.
Right.
And then found out that maybe it wasn't just an old house. And so it turns out it was probably, of course we can't prove it definitively, but it was probably the home of a very prominent Cherokee Indian who actually emigrated west with the prior to the Trail of Tears, you know, when the Cherokees were expelled from Georgia. And so I did a historic context report. That was my internship project. And it actually got published in a book called The Southern Colonial Backcountry, which was a collection of papers that were done for a Southern Colonial Backcountry symposium. I didn't present my paper there, but Steve was one of the editors of this book, and it's published by the University of Tennessee Press. And when they, he and his co-editor, you know, presented the best of the papers from the symposium, you know, to try to get it published, they said, well, you don't have anything on Native Americans in here. And so he kind of slipped my report in there to meet that need of, you know, having a little bit of diversity within the group of papers that was submitted.
And he got you published.
And he got me published. So, anyway. But yeah, I loved the I thought the internship process was really beneficial. And actually, I take quite a bit of pride in the fact that in order to get my master's degree, I had to not only do an internship and write a thesis, and I had to take comprehensive exams. You know, so I feel like that made it a very academically rigorous program, and I think that's something to be proud of. Do you still have to do comps?
We don't. So yes, you can comment on that. just for your information, there is a portfolio that must be compiled during the last semester, and instead of a comprehensive exam in lieu of it, there is the portfolio has to be presented and defended. So it's basically an oral comprehensive exam, but not much more open-ended than I imagine what you took. So yeah, what would you have to say to the department about the replacement of the comps?
Well, actually, I think it sounds good because because sometimes, you know, I mean, some people are good at taking tests and some people aren't, and that doesn't mean that you didn't learn the information. You can't defend it, you can't put it into use and put it into practice, and having to regurgitate it, you know, in a certain time period in a room. And the guy who sat next to me during comprehensive exams is probably still around, so I won't say his name, but he kept making this funny snorting noise like throughout the exam, and it was so distracting, obviously, because I remember it almost 20 years later. I mean, I'm glad that they didn't just do away with it completely, or didn't replace it with something. I'm glad to hear that they replaced it with something. It's not just, oh, just write a thesis and you're done, but you actually have to do something beyond the thesis to demonstrate your mastery of what you've learned.
So when you were here, how did the public history MA fit in with the larger history department, and especially thinking about the PhD students?
I thought it felt, like we were just one big department, the Department of History, because we had a fair number of PhD students who took, classes within the public history realm. And of course, we had to take classes that weren't, you know, just public history classes. We had to take, you know, regular history courses. So, for the most part, I thought it meshed pretty well. I mean, I didn't feel like, oh, we're like the redheaded stepchildren of the history department.
So you were included. Were there PhD students who did fields in public history when you were here?
There probably were. I don't remember any specifically.
I just didn't know if that helped maybe help to make it seem integrated together or not. So, sort of thinking back on, you're talking about liking a rigorous academic program. What do you think about specialized graduate education in general? What do you like now that you've been able to get the degree and go out and work? What are your thoughts on it? Looking back at your own experience.
I think that the program could have done more, and I hope that it does do more to prepare you for the real working world, and the types of jobs that are out there, and what those jobs are going to be like in terms of the sorts of projects that you would be taking on. For example, I mean, if I had known that this is something I could have pursued, I probably would have pursued being a preservation planner for a local government or a state government. But I don't know that I really understood that that position existed, or those types of positions existed. And so, I think that at the time, I think the department, and I don't know what the department does now to prepare you for, because it's, because the public history is kind of a hybrid degree, because it's not it's not preparing you for an academic life. It should be preparing you to, but it's not really a pre-professional degree or a professional degree like law or, something like that. So I hope that they do more in terms of really, realistic job preparation, or at least making you aware of the opportunities that are out there.
Do you often like the hybrid degree? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that unfortunately, the trend that I see, and I don't know, your background in terms of what your undergraduate degree is in, but because I have, okay, so disclosure here, I have an 18-year-old son who just graduated from high school in January or in June, and is at community college now, and is hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, hopefully going to Radford University in January. But what I see among his peer group is because the cost of an undergraduate degree has gone up so much, that there's this real push to, oh, pick a major that where you're going to be able to get a job and support yourself, as opposed to get an education. I have my undergraduate degree is actually, my major was theater, but it wasn't a fine arts degree, it's a Bachelor of Arts. I have a very well-rounded liberal arts degree. I had to, do some hard science, and I had to do social science and history, and I got a broad range, exposure to a broad range of subjects. And to some extent, what I was learning was how to think critically and how to solve problems. And and those actually are the skills that employers say they want from student from the young folks they're hiring today. But that's not reflected in what kids are going to school to do. Oh, I'm going to study accounting. Who at 18 thinks that they want to be an accountant for the rest of their lives? I mean, I know there are, certain people out there who do find that stuff fascinating. But so back to your original question about the hybrid degree, I think it is a valuable sort of compromise. Preparing for jobs, preparing for the work world, but also, exposing you to I don't want to say lofty ideals, but the idea of, being, education. So,
And as you
hybrid
say,
model.
you've gotten to use your research abilities too within your professional
Oh,
life.
absolutely. So, yeah. And I I used to tease my son when he was, because he didn't like math very much. When he would say things to me like, "Oh, I'm gonna get used to," and I would say, "You know, in my job, I use algebraic concepts every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I use my research skills every day. I certainly use critical thinking skills. So."
Maybe it's a similar problem, though, that you encountered here, that educators aren't always good at pointing to the side of the application side of things, as far as.
Yeah. So. In your experience, are you getting more information about potential jobs, potential career paths, that sort of thing?
I would say that most of the coursework, of course, about half the classes I take are not public history per se. They're, I just finished a reading seminar on 19th century American history, which has very little to do with formal public history training. But with that, within the larger department, there's a big reliance on things like email listservs, this kind of thing. But I wouldn't say that it's ever really worked into lesson plans explicitly, like we're going to have a class about all the different kind of career opportunities you can have.
Right.
And the same is true. We come in, they say, go find a grant to apply for to practice. You're basically sort of set off to go find something.
Well, so are you in the archives or?
Well, I'm in the museums track. I actually have a background as a librarian, but there's not technically an archives track anymore. Connie Schultz is still here, although she's retired. She has an office in the building. She works on the Pinckney papers and has a grant for that. So I've encountered her, but there aren't any direct classes here. You can take some in the library school, but again, I've taken some actually. I imagine they have a different angle to them than the ones in the public history department would have had before she retired. But I can't say that for sure.
Okay.
But do you think the history department then, help live up to the liberal ideal of?
I think so.
And a part of what we're doing with the idea of taking these oral histories is it's a landmark period. But like in a lot of places, that there is a question about the value of humanities. We're interested in history here. In our community, but I think also in the university, who have to make funding decisions, this sort of thing.
Right. Well, I used to work in economic development. So my career path after getting my my master's, was I actually did work in public history for 2 years. I was the Main Street program manager for the city of Lancaster, Texas, and then that position was defunded. And so I migrated from there into economic development, because the Main Street program is an economic development program, but it uses historic preservation as the basis of that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I went into straight economic development. And where I was going with that.
It's okay.
You were talking about humanities. You were talking about the value of humanities. It'll come back to me in a second.
Well, we're having to sell the value of the humanities, of a liberal education.
Yeah. So I used to work in economic development, and a part of my job as when I was the economic development director for Leesburg was, attracting new businesses. And so you have to think about what it's not just what's going to bring in the most money to the community, right? It's got to be that whole well-rounded, we want a well-rounded community. Because I used to say to people, well, if all we're interested in is how much money these businesses bring in, I wouldn't be doing anything but attracting hotels, car dealers, and nursing homes. Because those are the three biggest revenue generators for us, but what kind of community would we be?
Exactly.
You know, so if you, you know, relate that back to humanities in, within a university, yeah, you could have a, you know, a university that focuses just on those programs that bring in a lot of money or generate, you know, revenue for the university. But then what kind of, you know, then you become ITT, Technical Institute, and you go out of business.
That's a good quote there. And that is a concern. Did you feel like when you were here, the history program was well funded by the College of Arts and Sciences and larger university?
You know, I don't know that I was really aware one way or another. I mean, certainly, I mean, I went to, I mentioned that my, you know, that my undergraduate degree is in theater, and I went to Texas A&M University, which is a land grant college, started as a land grant college. You know, so big, heavy emphasis on agriculture and engineering. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we were, there were, when I was at A&M, it's bigger now, when I was at A&M, there were 36,000 undergraduate students. 30 of us were theater majors. It was that small a program, you know, so we really were kind of the redheaded stepchildren of the university. But I don't know that I really had any sense of the larger university, because as a graduate student, you're just so focused on your program that you don't really get that, you know? I mean,
right.
You know, when as an undergraduate at A&M, I had friends who were, you know, had all different kinds of majors, right? But as a graduate student, and particularly because I commuted, you know, the only other students I knew were also in the public history program or history majors, so, or in getting masters in history or PhDs in history. So I didn't really know any undergraduates. I didn't know folks outside our program.
Have you maintained any connections with people you were?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of my best friends are people I, you know, met through through USC. Megan Brown, who is now with the National Park Service, so she's up here in D.C. Jana Sweeney, who was Jana Trappolino when she went through the program, is one of my closest friends, although she lives in Nigeria now.
Really?
Her husband's an FBI agent, and so they've been, they're on a two-year assignment to Nigeria. David Blick, who works for HUD, is in Little Rock. Beth Busher is still, actually it's Beth Heron now, is still there in Colombia. So yeah, so I've kept in touch with you know, quite a few folks that I started the program. We all started the program that fall together. And
mm-hmm.
You know, program together, and we've stayed in touch.
So you had a good cohort then.
We did. We had a great cohort.
Yeah. Was that important to your experience here?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. When we did the research methods class, and Bob and Connie team taught that class, and we all had to, you know, write a research paper, and they, I don't know if they do this, if Bob still does it when he teaches that class, but then you have to, you know, he has a, you know, a session where everybody gives a presentation, you know, like you were presenting your paper at a symposium or something, and for some reason, I think there were like 9 of us in that class, and the papers just kind of naturally coalesced around certain topics, except Janice and mine and somebody else's. And he, you know, so he'd lumped, you know, the presentations together by these subject matters. But then he had these three kind of out there papers.
Mm-hmm.
Fit into, and so he called it the sex, drugs, and rock and roll session. So I actually had that printed on the spine of the copy of my paper that I gave him. He had to take it off because he, a colleague wanted to read it, and he didn't think that they would understand what that meant. And it was one of the papers that I did on one of the military bases.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember which one, but anyway. So yeah, but having that cohort and going through together, I think, was really important. And you know, as a testament, we've, you know, all stayed in touch, or not all of us, but a good group of us.
Were you able to apply any of your theater major skills in your master's degree, or your career, and or your career?
And or my career.
Yeah.
The two biggest things that I gained from my theater experience were, well, three. I'll give you three. One is I was in such a small program that everybody had to do everything. You know, you really couldn't specialize. You couldn't just act. You couldn't just do set design. You couldn't, you know, you had to, you know, there weren't enough people for you to just do one thing. Mm-hmm. So you ended up doing everything. And I was mostly a techie. I didn't do a whole lot of acting. I think I acted in one or two shows a year. But, you know, one show, you're building, you know, you're designing the costumes. And the next show, you're running the soundboard. And the next show, you know, you're helping build the set. You know, and so being a generalist, I think, was something I learned from that. Project management, you know, you're all, and teamwork, you all pull together to put off this production. You have, you know, three or four, you know, shows, and then you tear it all down, and you move on to the next one. And I think a lot of things in life are like that. You know, big effort to get there, you celebrate, and then you're on to the next thing. So, you know, so time management, you know, I think those are the skills that I learned from theater. And then finally, I would say the ability to stand up in front of people and talk. And actually, the Air Force taught me that as well, public speaking, being able to, you know, to get up and speak in front of people. The first time I was on stage in my theater program, my heart was pounding so hard I could not hear myself talk. I know I said my lines, but I could not hear them. So, anyway. But I got over that, you know, and that's what that taught me. And so now, my job now is I'm the public information officer for the town of Leesburg, and every once in a while I get interviewed on camera or, you know, or on the radio. And so those are good skills to have, to be able to speak. It's also good to know when to shut up. What not to say.
But so, the theater major to public history.
Yeah.
But again, so you talk about that background, the liberal background. It also doesn't make it makes sense within that framework too, in its own way.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Any regrets?
It's hard to play that game because you know, you think if you change this thing, what else would have changed? You know. Yeah.
Would you? Are there things in particular that you would have had the program in general, maybe the way particular classes were done? Anything like that that you would have advice you would have done differently?
When I went in, because I spent 7 years in the Air Force in between, you know, getting my undergraduate degree and going to USC. So I was a little bit older, not a great deal older, but a little bit older than most of the other students. And I was married. And so I think I was a little bit more outspoken in some respects. The class that I took at McKissick, I really despised the teacher, we didn't get along very well. So anyway, so maybe I wouldn't have taken that class. But I can't think of anything else that I would have changed or would have wanted to be different.
So what would you say would be, if you were having to think, though, sort of your vision for what the program should be doing here in 2016 for the classes that will be coming in the next few years? Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I would say that, focusing particularly on the historic preservation track, because that's, you know, the track that I went through you know, where I am active today, is, you know, get more real world, you know, more practitioners in to talk to the students and, you know, do case studies and that sort of thing. So you get, you know, more of an understanding about what's really happening in the field, you know, rather than just the academic, you know, discussions.
So people, like in actual classes, have speakers come in to talk?
Yeah, exactly. You know, have the preservation planner from the City of Columbia come, you know, present, you know, talk about, you know, what they do and how they do it, and maybe present, you know, a case study, you know, an application that's before the Board of Architectural Review, and how they go about doing their job, you know. That sort of thing.
Do you think that the program could do stuff like this outside of actual classes too?
Sure. Yeah, you know, more, you know, field trips and that sort of thing. But, you know, because I think we got a theoretical, you know, understanding of how it all works, but maybe not a real world understanding. Because, I mean, one of the things that I struggle with as the chair of the Historic Preservation Commission here in Clark County is a really small community. And so when someone you know comes to you and says, you know, and they own a historic, you know, house and they want to rip out the windows or, you know, do something to it, and to have to say no to someone who is essentially your neighbor, no, you can't do that to your house. That's a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to, you know, have the courage of your convictions to stand on principles of, well, this is, you know, we've said, you know, we as a collective body, the community of Clark County, have said that we value our historic building. And we did that by setting up this historic district. And because you own a historic building in it, that you have to abide by that. You know, and then, you know, occasionally, you know, people do stuff, you know, thinking, oh, well, it's easier to ask forgiveness and permission to replace all the windows, you know, all the wooden 6/6 double hung wooden windows. I'm just going to put vinyl windows in. And, you know, we have to say, no, sorry, you've got to take them out. And you know that that's you know, an economic hit to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, it would have been less expensive if they'd done it right the first time. You know, that's a hard thing to deal with sometimes. And you know, understanding that reality of the field of historic preservation, I think that's something that it would be valuable for students to understand.
Were these principles upheld in the program when you were here, you think?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. But to understand how it actually all comes, you know, together. You know, with a, you know, an applicant standing in front of the Board of Architecture Review and the Board of Architecture Review saying,
mm-hmm.
or yes, but you have to do this too, or whatever.
Have you had any issues with in your career with different opinions about these matters from people with a similar background?
Well, I mean, there are always, you know, variations of opinions or, you know, a range of opinions. So I don't know that I've ever run into, you know, someone, you know, saying, you know, taking a, you know, like, oh, well, for example, you know, there's a house in the town of White Post, and the owners bought it and were planning to renovate it, and when they started the renovation process, they realized that there was way more termite damage than they had thought. And so then they, you know, were going to try to sell it, and then the market crashed, and they couldn't get their money out of it, and they let it sit. And so the market crashed in, what, 2008? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, here it is 8 years later, and it's, you know, the house has been sitting there. You know, it's open to the elements. Some of the windows are out. You know, they ripped out a bunch of the plaster. Actually, I think both floors are down to the studs. And then they come in for a demolition permit. And so then we have to have a discussion at the, you know, the Historic Preservation Commission about, do we allow them to demolish the building? And of course, there's a process that they have to go through that, you know, they have to try to sell it. And if they can't sell it, then we can't deny them the right to tear the building down. But, you know, within the Historic Preservation Commission, we had differences of opinion. You know, they are claiming that they need to tear it down because it's structurally unsound. And there were those of us who are more of a hardline preservationist, myself and another woman who is actually an architect, who are saying, well, do we have to just take their word for it that it's structurally unsound? Or can we require them to, you know, prove to us that it's structurally unsound? But then again, that's an expense to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get a structural engineer in there. And, you know, so applying these principles to real world situations, when you have to consider someone, you know, it's someone's property and they, to some extent, have a right to do with it what they want, you know, it's not always black and white. So, and I don't know if, I don't know how well that comes across to students in the historic preservation classes. Do they understand these kind of gray areas that they're going to be dealing with, or could be dealing with?
Yeah, I couldn't speak for that. I work at the SHPO here, so I encountered it some myself in my actual experience.
Yeah.
Well, have anything else you'd like to say about how your training here is carried through to your career?
I can't think of anything. I mean, I obviously am very proud of the degree that I have and enjoyed my time at USC and found it very valuable. I'd certainly do it again if I were making the decision,
mm-hmm.
or if it were, you know, 1992 and I was trying to make that decision again about whether or not to do it, I'd certainly do it again.
Anything else?
No, I can't think of anything. So, anyway.
Well, it's been really great to meet you, even if it is on Skype here. And
yeah.
And Tom.
And Tom. And you didn't get to see the other one. Jerry Hibb. Yes, I have cats named Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, well.
And a dog named Roxy, who's sitting at my feet.
I can't see the dog, yeah.
Nah, she's down here. Come here, Roxy.
Come here.
There. Oh, wow. Good girl.
It's a big dog.
She's a big girl. She's at 65 pounds. She is a boxer pit bull mix. She's very sweet. Aren't you? Can you say hello? Do you look all right?
Yeah, say she can't smell me, so I basically don't exist.
That's right.
Yeah.
So luckily you can't smell her. Smelly dog. She's a smelly dog. All right. Well, Justin, it was really nice talking with you, and I hope this was helpful.
Oh, no, it's been immensely helpful. And it's always good to talk to people. So we've talked about history and just the broader value of what people in the real world think about the merits of a liberal education, which is certainly a very relevant conversation, both among people who have to make academic administrators,
right.
You know, and too, not just in the broader world, but and that's partly what we, you know, encounter during fiscal times like the post 2008 world. So. So I'm glad to hear the program has prepared you well, since I'm also a student in it. I was actually up at Harper's Ferry over the summer, so I wasn't too terribly far from where you are.
Oh no, I'm really close to that. I live in Boyce. So I live in Clark County, and if you went down 340 from Harper's Ferry,
mm-hmm.
you go right through Berryville, and then
yeah,
Boyce.
I drove straight through Berryville one time.
Right.
Yeah, cute little town, actually.
Yeah, and then Boyce is south of it, about 8 miles south of it, and it's even littler.
Really?
And so that's where I live, so, yeah.
Yeah, the road down to, going down to Front Royal.
Right, yeah, you drove through Boyce.
Yeah, so I did, okay.
Yeah, if you went from Harper's Ferry to Front Royal, you drove through Boyce.
Yeah, I'm going to be passing through there at some point again soon to go back and finish hiking through the Shenandoah.
Oh, good. Are you going to do the Appalachian Trail?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to do a through hike all the way to...
No, I don't think so. No, I think I'll be one of these people that does it in pieces.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, the whole thing at once is a bit adventurous for me, I think.
Yeah.
Well, good. Thanks so much for meeting with me via Skype, even into the evening here. Feel free to contact me if you want to, if you have anything that you'd like to add to it. That I'd be more than happy to we could just arrange another time, and it doesn't have to be even the next few days. There, what I'll leave you with, though, is I'm gonna, that there's a release form that we send out. That's sort of a standard form, and you can think about it. What you've said here, I won't use any of this for anything or archive it until you would send that form back to me. How would you like me to get that to you? Do you want me to send it to you by email? In which case, you would have to be able to have access to a scanner to scan it back. Would you like me just to mail you a copy?
No, just email it.
Okay.
I can scan it and send it back to you.
I will do that tomorrow morning, then, if it's okay. So again, yeah, any questions, just let me know. Also, feel free to contact Allison Marsh, who's in charge of the project. And again, it's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, good night.
Good night.